This is Audible.
GG Make Paradox. Where the Hell is Tesla? Book 3. Written and narrated by Rob Dirks. Notice. Posted by Fred Morris, Regional Director, New York City, Federal Bureau of Investigation. First, thank you, reader, for joining us on two journeys, and now this third. Your willing acceptance that these stories are fiction has helped us perpetuate our misinformation campaign. Wait, I wasn't supposed to say that. Delete. It's not deleting. Delete. What in the ever-loving hell? Delete. Kim, honey, can you come here and take a look at this? I'm dictating, and it won't stop. Yes, of course I hit the escape. I'm hitting all the keys. Yes, I agree. This damn computer has a mind of its own, and we should get a new one. Maybe this weekend. I think there was a Best Buy flyer in the mail yesterday. What am I working on? Oh, they asked me to write an intro to Chip's new book to make sure people continue to think it's all fake. Chip Collins. Yes, I like him too very much. But sometimes he can be such a royal pain in the ass. You know what I'm talking about if you had to work with him. Okay, thanks for your help, honey. Whatever, I'm sure the FBI will edit this part out. They've got professionals for this kind of stuff. All right then, computer, start recording again. Second, in these pages, reader, you'll find a description of something called a paradox. I want to be perfectly clear. Never has the entire city, state, country, or planet been in any existential jeopardy by an uncontrollable tear in the fabric of reality that would collapse all time and space. All references to a paradox and the threat it poses, leaving absolutely nothing but the void, are purely fantasy written by the author, Clarence Chip Collins. In addition, contrary to the claims contained in this book, neither Mr. Collins nor any of his family or friends have ever saved the multiverse. And I'm not saying there even is such a thing as a multiverse, but if there was one, they didn't save it. Again. Finally, if on the night of February 29, 2020, you happened to see an orange glow emanating from the New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan, that was the window washers. Yes, the window washers had a little chemical accident. No one was harmed, of course, and the windows were subsequently cleaned. And like I said, the fate of the Earth was never in peril, not even for one white-knuckle, bowel-exploding moment. And so, for the third time, I invite you to enjoy Mr. Collins' tales of astonishing and far-fetched events that could never, ever happen. Ever. Yours truly, Fred Morris, Regional Director, New York City, Federal Bureau of Investigation. Chapter 1. Pull My Finger. Hey, Pete, pull my finger. He waves it away like it's on fire. Dude, you going to start the next book with a fart joke? What book? Oh, they didn't tell you?
Didn't tell me what? Who?
Dude, you have to start reading your emails. Seriously. You know, the ones marked urgent FBI official business.
I delete them as fast as I can. They didn't tell me what, dude.
Pete pulls my finger, and yes, I squeak out a Rip Van Winkle. I wanted it to be a stinker. He deserves it for springing whatever this book thing is on me in the middle of Guy's Night Out. But it's a loud one. The loud ones never stink. Damn. Wait. Guy's Night Out. I should explain. Guy's Night Out is actually code for Guy's Night In. Lately, it's been our only chance to hang out at all, me and Pete. With all the FBI shit and the ITA, and we're all having jobs and being responsible, like we're actually grown-ups or something with families and careers. So every other Thursday, Julie and Meg... Well, hold on. Have I told you Pete moved back to this dimension? Shit, I don't think so. I'm just assuming you know what the fuck is going on, as usual. Okay, anyway, Pete and Meg decided to move back to our dimension after the whole blue juice craziness. Don't Touch the Blue Stuff, Where the Hell is Tesla Book 2, available at bookstores everywhere in case you need to catch up, although I won't see a dime in royalties because the FBI is such a bunch of tightwads. Anyway, they moved back so we could both be hipster New York City parents and take up the whole sidewalk with our tandem $1,000 Swiss baby strollers while the poor schmucks behind us drag their offspring around on wooden sleds like that kid on Game of Thrones. I'm kidding. Don't get the wrong idea. We have the regular pick the cheapest one and let's get the hell out of here strollers from Bye Bye Baby. Not that any stroller is cheap enough for me. I was like, it's four wheels and a bucket. How much can it cost?
I could make one from stuff around the apartment for $5. But I think I've beaten the stroller thing to death already, so let's move on. Anyway, every other Thursday, Julie and Meg get to hang up their mommy hats for a night and go out and paint the town whatever color vomit is after 6 strawberry mojitos, and me and Pete babysit our 2 angels. Let me clarify again. By babysit, I mean play video games while Gigi and Hannah dress Bobo up in girl clothes and try to smear eyeshadow on his fur. And by angels, I mean anarchist toddlers from the 9th circle of hell. Don't get me wrong. Underneath all the anarchy, little Gigi Collins and Hannah Turner are sweet little fluffs of cotton candy spun from the silk of fairy spiders who live in the clouds. When they actually sleep, yes, it does happen sometimes, me and Pete'll sneak in and spy on them snoring their barely audible little kid snores and holding hands in the kiddie bed, and man, shit doesn't get any closer to heaven on earth than that. It's so sweet once, I even leaned my head on Pete's shoulder like, "Aw, will you look at that?" And he was like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And I was like, "Shh, they're sleeping." And he whisper shouted back, "Don't even think about resting your head on my shoulder, ever." Anyway, we're sitting here now playing Madden. I'm actually kicking Pete's ass. God, I love this game because it's like one of 3 things I can do better than him. And I'm thinking about this book thing, and then I notice the complete lack of sound coming from the kids in the bedroom. It's a little too quiet in there. Hey, dude, would it be horrible if I asked Gigi to get me a beer? Yes, that'll be the one thing she remembers when she grows up. Dad made me get beers for him. That's it. Her one memory of you. You want that to be her one horrible memory of you? Go to town. I harumph and pause the game and get myself a beer, wondering if these kids will ever be old enough to do all the lawn mowing, not that we have lawns up here in our second floor apartment, and garbage duty and beer fetching. Probably never. Whatever. When I plop back down, I can't get Pete's comment out of my head. You think she'll remember anything good? I mean, we do cool shit all the time with her. No, but don't take it personally. Humans are wired to remember negative experiences better, way back in the primitive parts of our brains, so we can recall where the lions mauled our cave mate last time and avoid walking past their den next time. It's just survival, dude. Feel-good memories don't help you stay alive. It's called negative bias. What, did you take a class on caveman psychology back in college? I thought you were a finance major. Dude, that's just shit everyone knows, especially philosophy majors. Did you not take one psychology class? Don't you remember Professor Crenshaw, how every class she'd remind us how we literally live better than kings from medieval times? But we'd still complain about the 3-minute walk from her classroom back to the dorm? Which do you remember, her talks or the walk? The walk, I froze my ass off in the winter. Bingo, negative bias. Whatever. You think I can start manually inserting good memories into her brain now, like Inception style? No. I ignore him and call out. Hey, Gigi, get in here, cuteness. Daddy has to implant a permanent good memory. There's a chuckle from the bedroom. Whatever they're up to is no good, I can tell. And then Gigi comes running out. Well, more lurching like a drunken sailor. She's still getting used to running full tilt on those new legs at 2-ish. Julie knows her exact age, but she says it in months. I think it's like 21.35 months or something. I don't know why we can't just say she's 2. And she scoots under Pete's legs and hops up on the couch between us. I put her on my lap and peer deeply into her big blues. Okay, I want you to remember something. She nods, very serious. I lean in so our eyes are almost touching. For the rest of your life. She nods again, giggles. Okay, ready? Daddy loves you more than anything in the world. Will you remember that?
Yep.
And she laughs and tries to scooch down and get back to whatever embarrassing thing they were doing to Bobo. No, wait, Gigi, tell me who you love more than anything in the world. She puts a finger to her forehead, thinking, smiles.
Mommy!
Okay, that's fair. Acceptable answer. And who do you love second most? She bops my nose with a finger.
Daddy!
All right, good. Now, who do you love third most, Uncle Pete or Bobo? Choose your answer wisely, young Jedi. She looks over at Pete, who's pointing to himself emphatically, literally begging to be the third most loved by Her Highness Gigi, and she gets that little mischievous grin on her face and squints at him and whispers, "Bobo?" Pete's face contorts into something from a cheap soap opera, like the exaggerated shock of being spurned by a true love, like, "After everything I've done for you?" Yeah, he's really laying it on thick, and Gigi's giggling her head off, and then Pete gets fake angry, and Gigi squeals in delight and runs away because she knows this means a race around the apartment. So they scamper through the living room to the kitchen and back, the princess hunted by the big scary monster, and then back to the kitchen and bonk. Oh, shit. I rush into the kitchen, and sure enough, Gigi's laying on the floor holding her head. She must have hit it on the dishwasher again. And, yikes, blood! Pete, hand me that towel! Gigi's crying turns into ear-piercing shrieks at the sight of her own blood. So as I sit there and huddle her close and hold a towel with pressure against her noggin and rock her back and forth, Hannah and Bobo come running out.
Oh my god.
Pete's laughing. A big, deep Pete belly laugh. He won't stop. I look up at him. Hey, dude, what's your problem? This could be serious. And then I see Bobo. Yikes, what the hell happened to you? I don't know why I even asked. It's obvious what happened to Bobo, what these two angels, in quotes, were up to in the bedroom. It's haircut night at Salon de Collins. Poor Bobo is standing there with giant patches of fur missing, randomly, all over his body. Pete gently takes the scissors away from Hannah, and Gigi laughs, between her sobs and those eyes so heavy with little toddler tears. Bobo shuffles over to us and puts his hand to his mouth. Uh-oh, he looks like he's going to do the eat his own flesh and regurgitate it on her to heal her thing. Dude, Bobo, no, she's fine. God, once was enough with that. Here, look, she's fine. I pull the towel away, and wouldn't you know, not only is there no blood leaking out from her cut, there's no cut. And I literally watch as the bump on her head slowly disappears. Huh. Hey, Pete, you seeing this?
Yeah, you passed on your freaky Bobo healing genes to her. I guess that's a good thing.
Pete's right, of course. Gigi's got half my Chip Bobo genes. Bobo gave them to me when he molded his regurgitated flesh to my ankle stump, giving me this stupid furry foot. And I passed them down to Gigi. But is that a good thing? What if she grows up with a furry foot? I say a silent prayer for her not to grow up with a furry foot. Please, God, in your infinite power, spare my child the curse of the furry foot. Well, it's not exactly a curse, but it's embarrassing. Please let her be embarrassed throughout her life by normal embarrassing stuff, not an embarrassing furry foot. Thank you in advance, God. Gigi looks up at me, smiling now, wiping the tears away with her shirt sleeves, and I wonder if she's got the telepathy thing, too. Not sure if that would be better or worse than a furry foot. But she just stands up, so we're eye to eye now, and says,
"Go see old man."
"No, honey, we don't need to see old man. Your boo-boo's all gone, see?" And I lift her chubby fingers up to touch her own healed head. "Feel that? It's gone."
"No, go see old man."
"Nope, you don't need to see old man to kiss your boo-boo. There is no boo-boo."
"No, go see old man."
This time she's asking it with a quaver in her voice, lips trembling. More tears welling in her eyes. God damn it, I already know where this is going. "No, honey, no tears. Please, we can't see old man. He's working. He's very busy. Busy, busy, busy." But she's not listening anymore. She's wailing like she hit her head on 10 dishwashers. She wants to see old man, and that's that. Damn it. Oh, and great. Now look, Hannah's crying for old man, too. Wonderful. And wait, Bobo? Bobo's big black Bambi eyes are welling up, too. "Oh, for Christ's sake, Bobo, seriously? You don't even know what they're crying about." Through the wailing and the pleading and the barely controlled chaos, I spy Pete tapping on his phone.
"It's no use. I surrender. I'm fetching us an Uber over to the ITA.
Yep, the ITA. If you haven't guessed by now about Gigi's old man crush, yeah, it's Nikola Tesla. So I guess we're taking them all over to room 3327 of the New Yorker Hotel for a little jump into the interdimensional transfer apparatus. Great. Pete, you're just doing this because you couldn't bear to lose another game of Madden, aren't you? He responds rhetorically.
You'd rather listen to this for 3 hours?
As we bundle them up and make our way down the stairs, this odd family, the masters of interdimensional travel and their two kids, and an alien disguised as a hoodie-wearing, way-too-hairy grade schooler, though not quite as hairy at the moment, I realize this is the book Pete was talking about. It started at this exact moment, right now. Without reading a single email, I know the FBI wants me to continue this story, the crazier the better, because it'll help perpetuate the myth that none of this is real, that Nikola Tesla couldn't possibly have invented a dimensional portal in his hotel room in New York City, and that there couldn't possibly be villains like Who, or strange multidimensional abominations like the Blue Juice. And most of all, it couldn't possibly be true that some doofus named Chip Collins has saved them all. that there have been moments when all of reality has depended on the actions of a man who can't even match his own socks. We pile into the car, buckle the kids into their car seats, and Gigi looks up at me, through the little face opening in her parka, snowflakes melting on her eyelashes.
Go see old man.
Yes, my little babushka, we're going to see the old man, and he'll kiss your boo-boo. She smiles and sighs and whispers,
tell me.
Which means tell her the whole story, the whole crazy epic tale with Tesla. She never gets tired of hearing it, and so I begin. Once upon a time, there were two regular guys, Daddy and Uncle Pete. This is way before you kids, by the way. Anyway, I was a security guard at an old FBI building, which is not as glamorous as it sounds, and I found the lost journal of old man. His name is Nikola Tesla, the world's most amazing inventor ever. In his hotel room, because of course that's where you would build this kind of thing, he created a special doorway to other parallel dimensions, the interdimensional transfer apparatus. And me and Uncle Pete sort of locked ourselves inside. So we needed to find old man to help us get home. But along the way, we met Bobo and Meg, and we had to defeat a bad guy. She giggles, who? Yes, that's right, baby. Who? This very bad man, who unfortunately reminded me very much of Santa Claus, was trying to get rid of all the universes except one. What an evil, silly man. Anyway, during a fight with him, I got my foot chopped off, and Bobo, two of them, chewed their own hands off and helped me grow back my foot.
Fowie!
Daddy's furry foot. Anyway, he gave me, and I guess you now, healing ability. Oh, and also telepathy. I think. So we fought this guy Who and his minions in the epic battle for the multiverse. And because we are not only your daddies, but big, amazing heroes, we won and saved everything.
Yay! Gigi saved too!
Not exactly, but sure. Maybe someday you will save everything too. Why not? Anyway, after a while, Uncle Pete disappeared, and we found out it was because of some icky blue goop, the blue juice. It was gross.
Ew, gross.
Yes, grosser than gross. So me and Gina, you know her, right?
Aunt Gina.
Yep. Me and Aunt Gina had to visit Abba, the cockroach king, and learn how to use the telepathy Bobo gave me to save Uncle Pete. All of the Uncle Petes. Infinite Uncle Petes. Oh, and Albert Einstein, too. But before we could say we won again, Daddy had to play President of the United States, and with the help of all his friends, make the blue juice go away forever. And then me and Mommy got married, again, and had you. I look down with a sappy grin on my face, and she's fast asleep. My phone beeps. It's Julie sending me a photo of her and Meg and now Gina Phillips doing shots. Oh, boy. Hey, dude, look who they found. I show him the phone, but it's off already, so he hits the home button and notices the date. Hey, it's February 29th, leap year. He slaps me on the back. Happy birthday, Clarence Chip Collins. Oh, I don't know if I ever told you. Leap year is my birthday. I do the math in my head. Dividing by 4, it hurts. And proclaim, 9 leap years since 1984. I'm 9. Sounds right. You act 9. He glances at Hannah, also asleep. You know what? Tomorrow we'll get an ice cream cake with crunchies for you. Promise. That reminds me. Hey, remember the first time we hit the ITA? It was on your 30th birthday. And that's when I have the thought, the one I have at the start of every one of these books, a thought that makes me want to laugh and cry and scream and run away while screaming at the same time. And maybe, just maybe, shit in my pants. Pete's staring at me with the same exact look, and I know he's thinking the same exact thing. And we're about to jump into the ITA on my birthday during a leap year. Just like when we jumped into the ITA on his birthday and shit started exploding immediately. And I say the words out loud, but I know we both only half believe them. Don't worry, dude. Nothing's gonna go wrong this time.